The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So if somebody has asked me to talk about lay training and monastic training, so I'm going to take my courage in my hands and give it a shot. But I won't be able to say everything about it because it's an enormous area rich with food for thought. And I'm just going to talk about some aspects of it. As we all know, the Buddha created the fourfold Sangha, male and female monks, male and female lay people. And we all need each other. We all rely on each other. We all depend on each other. And, And of course, by far the majority of Buddhists are not monks. They're lay people. Nearly all of them are lay people. Especially in the West. It's not the politically correct thing to do to be a monk. In the East, there's the tradition that if you're a lay person, your best hope is to make offerings, support the monks, and hope for a favorable rebirth in the Tushita heaven or in Buddha Amitabha's pure land. But you can really train, you know. But this view seems to be changing. And of course, in the West, we have a quite different view, you know. Everybody can meditate, everybody can train, everybody can find the truth. You don't have to be a monk. And in fact, over the centuries, this view of lay training has changed. It used to be, I think in the old days, in the Buddha's time, it was such a tradition that you'd have your renunciates who really trained and the lay people who supported the renunciates that early Buddhism, I think, kind of came out of that. So the idea that everybody can meditate, everybody can train, everybody can find the truth is more a Mahayana approach and has kind of developed more over the centuries. So like in China, and in Japan, and in countries where there's the Mahayana tradition, lay training has become much more prominent. And of course, here in the West, most people are lay people, and not many people want to be monks. And some people actually don't think, well, why have monks at all? It seems kind of weird, you know. Why do we need monks? Well, some people just want to be monks, I'll come to that. But for some people, the question is, can they really train as lay people? Can lay people realize the truth? Can lay people become enlightened? Sometimes people feel, if I was really sincere, I'd be a monk. I have no desire to be a monk, but I was really sincere, that's what I'd do. But actually, you know, thinking they're settling for second best, but in fact, it's a little bit like being a baker, and then thinking, if I was really good, I'd be a cabinet maker. I know nothing about wood. I've no desire to be a cabinet maker, but if I was really good, I'd give up baking and do wood things instead. You know, bread disappears, you just eat it, furniture lasts, or something, you know. And, or being a teacher and thinking you should be a writer, or, you know, thinking that what you're doing is not enough. Even though you're happy doing that, it's much better to be happy doing what we do and not think, if I was really good, I'd be doing something different, because it's not like that. We need bakers and cabinet makers. We need bread and furniture. No. We need both monks and lay people. In countries where the Dharma has been almost exterminated, temples burned, monks killed, it's the lay people who have kept the Dharma alive and have kept it going. In China, in Tibet, in many other countries where there's been persecution of Buddhists, especially of monks, the lay people have safeguarded the Dharma and kept it alive to spring up again. And having a few monks survive really helped that, provided a focus to pass on the Dharma. But the lay people's faith in spite of persecution and terrible hardship, really, really helped the Dharma to prosper. As I said, nearly everybody doesn't want to be a monk, no desire whatsoever. But there are a few weird people who have that deep wish. And to be a monk, you have to love the life and be content with it. And for most people, they'd rather die. And you have to be suited to it as well, to love the life, to have that aspiration, to know what it is, and to be content within it. Sometimes people are monks for a while, and then it's no longer the thing for them, as we've seen recently. That's perfectly fine. You know, they don't want the life anymore, they want something different. It's perfectly fine, they want to do something else. Because people change, and their lives change, and their path changes, and that's not a bad thing, it's just the way things are, it's perfectly fine. Sometimes there are people who want to be monks, but circumstances prevent it. Maybe there's illness, physical disability, maybe some other problems. Not everyone is suited to the life. Not everybody can do it. There are people who'd love to be monks, but actually circumstances forbid it. However, there is rebirth, you know, and maybe in a future life they will realize their aspiration without those particular circumstances. Monastic life is hard. Lay life is hard. Everyone is different. We all have our different temperaments, our different aptitudes, and we all have different circumstances, different karma, different ways of training. And yet it's not that different. It's not these people have something and those people can't have it. We all can train. You don't have to be a monk to train and to do excellent training. You just have to believe that you can train. And this is the most important point, that we can train in whatever situation we find ourselves. All of us can train and realize the truth. We just have to believe it and to give ourselves to it in whatever situation we find ourselves. We're not cut off from the Dharma. The scriptures are full of stories of lay people finding the truth, becoming enlightened, doing wonderful training, especially the Mahayana scriptures. But in the old Pali Canon too, there's all these wonderful stories of lay people, lay men, lay women, of deep faith, finding truth, supporting the Buddha and his monks, but finding the truth for themselves, not just helping other people, but helping themselves as well within that. Lots of stories of that. Vimalakirti, the prime example of the layperson who's way advanced, far beyond most of the monks. In fact, the bodhisattvas all go to question Vimalakirti and he makes mincemeat of them. Layman Pang and his family, extremely are remarkable, enlightened people. They sort of talk to each other in Zen koans, which I certainly don't understand. And all sorts of stories about them, you know. And I think it's one of the families getting ready to die, and I think his daughter goes out and runs out into a field and dies before him. And he thinks, oh, you know, it's, you know. Ajahn Mun, the great meditation master in Thailand who lived in the early 20th century, he would talk about, he was this really fierce old, you know, ascetic monk. And he would talk about the Dharma to a laywoman. They'd sit there and talk and they'd laugh. And the monks would have no idea what they were talking about. But this laywoman and Ajahn Mun would have this complete rapport, which is a lovely story because he looks so fierce. He sees pictures of him looking totally grim. You know. And then you hear about him laughing and chatting with lay people and training them in deep ways that his monks didn't understand. Great Master Bankei, same thing. He had a friendship with a lay person. I didn't have time to look it up, but I remember this. He'd sit and laugh, and you know, talk in riddles and roar with laughter. Nobody else would have the faintest idea what they were talking about. But they knew. I think he was, you know, just an eccentric fellow. And he and Master Bankhe were just great friends. So it's not an impediment. It's not an impediment. Pali Canon. All these examples, as I said, of laymen and laywomen becoming stream entrants with deep faith, well on their way to enlightenment. And somebody asked the Buddha in one of the sutras, somebody asked the Buddha, can lay people realize the truth, become one stream entrants and so forth? And the Buddha said, not only can they, but many, many do. They become stream entrants, they become once returners, some of them become non-returners. They don't tend to become arahants. However, I don't think we need to worry. I'm not worried about being an arahant. If I become a once returner, I'd be happy, you know. I don't think I have to worry that I'm not going to be the Buddha just yet, you know. But this lay person talking to the Buddha and realizing that lay people can train, can realize the truth, he said, ah, it's like the river Ganges. All these streams flow down towards the sea from wherever they are. It's likewise, all the monks, female monks, all the householders are on their way to nirvana or streaming towards nirvana. They're on their way. It's just a lovely analogy. Just like the river Ganges, streaming on their way towards nirvana. We may not be there yet, but we're on our way. We're on the path, and we will get there. In whatever circumstance we are, whether we're in some little ravine or in some little pool for now, we all find our way to the sea. Just not to doubt that. Never to doubt that. Never to think that we're impeded and that we cannot train. No matter what circumstance we may find ourselves in. And there are differences between living as a layperson and living as a monk. You know, clearly we wear robes, we shave our heads, we live in community. And there's differences, especially in our relationships. And the person who asked me about lay monastic life asked particularly about relationships. Relationships are a huge part of our lives, whether we're monks or lay people. Dealing with each other is an enormous part of our life. It's what we spend an awful lot of our time doing. And in the world, relationships can be like an exchange. You know, I love you, you love me. I invite you for dinner, you invite me back. I give you something, you give me something in return. It's a bit like that. It isn't always unconditional. Mothers may love their children in a completely unconditional way, far beyond what most of us may imagine if we're not mothers. Never been a mother, so, you know. Sometimes not. Sometimes mothers and children have horrible relationships. But sometimes they just have this completely unconditional, no matter what you do, I will still love you because you are my son or daughter. And fathers too. But often relationships have this sticky aspect of needing something. You know, I want something. I need you to make me happy. I need you to make me fulfilled. I cannot live without you. I have to have this relationship. And that can be kind of sticky and confining. And in monastic life, of course, as I said, we still have the relationships, but we try not to let them get sticky. We try not to be needy. We try not to be dependent on somebody else to make us feel better about ourselves. We try to stand on our own feet, helping each other, having friendships, yes, and deep love for each other in the monastic life, but not with that neediness. That's what we try to relinquish, that wanting something from others, whether it's love or respect or admiration or making me feel better or, you know, when I feel bad about myself, looking to somebody else to fill that hole. We try to fill that hole for ourselves with training or to allow the hole to heal up, as it were. To go beyond the needing something in that sticky way from other people. Does this make sense? Do you know what I mean about that sort of stickiness? To find that love for beings within ourselves. And we're still human beings, we still have friendships, you know, but we try not to be needy. To love all living things as if they were one's own children, as great Master Dogen says. That's a kind of an ideal aspiration. I would love to love all living things as if they were my own children, without differentiation, without preference. It's hard to do. And yet that love, that's the love of Samantabhadra, love for beings, regardless of personal view or preferences, that love that can come through for beings, that helps beings, and that can manifest when needed, not preferring one over another, like Kanzeon doesn't keep her water for the good people and, you know, not for the bad people. No, you can't have any of this nice water of compassion, you're not good enough. You know, Kanzeon doesn't do that. Samantabhadra doesn't do that. We try not to do that, to keep on, try not to just love some people and not others. To actually allow that love to come forth for everybody, but not a sticky kind of thing, not a needy kind of thing, but a giving kind of thing. To be able to give without expectation. To give of ourselves without expecting something in return. Not the exchange, but simply the giving as is needed. And of course, in monastic life, you know, we relinquish intimate relationships and family life because we're trying to relinquish clinging, the cause of suffering. So Samantabhadra, universal love. Unconditional love for all beings, as I said, not easy to practice in practice. It's not a bargain, it's not neediness. Finding that love within ourselves and letting it pour forth to all beings. Letting it pour forth. It doesn't always look like love and is not always warm and fuzzy. As mothers know, sometimes, you know, you have to speak firmly to your child when it's about to go out and get run over or take drugs or get pregnant or whatever they all do, the poor little things that's constantly in trouble. You have to, you know, say something. You can't just say, oh, there, there, dear. Yes, you just go having a good time and we'll pick up the bits later. You know, you have to, you can't always give people what they want. It's not always good to give people what they want. And sometimes it looks stern. It still has warmth, but it's not sticky. Samantabhadra is not sticky. We try not to be sticky. And we're still human. We're still human. All of us are human. There is that warmth of humanity within that. It's not just some kind of chilly dispensation from on high. It's more like letting that universal love pour through our human life, our human form, towards other human forms and animal forms and other forms. Just allowing it to pour forth, but without wanting something, expecting something, needing something, but allowing it just to come forth. This is what we aspire to be free, unconditional, not I love you as long as you give me what I want, but I love you because it's your being and it's good. It's love that comes through us. It's not our personal possession. Love of Samantabhadra, filling all lands, all beings, all dust particles. It's lovely, you know. All each little particle of dust in all the lands is full of Buddhas and full of the love of Samantabhadra. Hard to imagine, and yet it can come through us if we just allow it to and don't get in its way. And this universal love also partakes of wisdom and compassion, because love has wisdom, how best to help, and compassion that we want to help. Compassion, love, and wisdom, they all go together. Okay, lay and monastic training. When it comes down to it, there is nothing preventing any of us from training deeply and realizing the truth. Because the training is actually not that different when it comes down to it We're all trying to meditate, keep to the precepts, be here in this moment, do our best. All of us, it's the same thing, actually. It just takes somewhat different forms. And our training is the relinquishment of suffering, relinquishment of creating suffering for ourselves and other beings, so that we may realize the truth, practice truth, and live by truth, and not obstruct ourselves with suffering. Suffering is caused by clinging. And so monks try to pare down the things they cling to. That's why we relinquish family life and wear robes and all that. We try to pare down our attachments, but we're not perfect. We still like our morning cup of tea. We still have our views and opinions to deal with. We still have our fears. We still have our little comforts and our little selfishnesses. We still have our view of self, me being a self, that we need to work with, like anybody. We're all the same in that. So being a monk doesn't mean, oh, I've cast off everything, I'm suddenly transcended. We still have self, lots of it. And sometimes, of course, it's glued to the end of your nose because there's not a lot to distract you from it. Mostly it's glued to the end of your nose. And in lay life, there are more things that one can cling to and more distractions to, so you don't always see, you know, what you're clinging to. So it can be harder to relinquish, but it's not impossible. It's just a little harder because of circumstance. You know. Monastic life applies a certain pressure. We have fewer distractions. We have a schedule. We train together. We concentrate on our practice, and we see the self glued to the end of our nose. And in lay life, it's harder to maintain that focus, but it is not impossible. And I see many lay trainees do just that. I see many lay people train in exemplary ways with a focus, a commitment, and a dedication and faith that leaves me gobsmacked, actually. It's a technical term. It's the commitment that makes the difference for all of us, whether you're a monk or a lay person, the commitment, the C word. And we can have that commitment. We can make that commitment, whether we're monks or lay people. We can still do it. As I said, we have many trainees doing wonderful, remarkable training in their relationships, in their work, with their own karmic tendencies, their own patterns that they see. Ah, look what I'm doing, you know. In a very focused and committed way, with deep faith in the Dharma, knowing that it is indeed the medicine for all suffering. No matter who we are, no matter where we are, no matter what our circumstances, the Dharma is the medicine for suffering. It applies to all of us. We all have access to it. We can all train. I know a number of lay people who are training more deeply than some monks. I know a number of lay people who have had deep religious experiences in lay life. It's not just for monks. Monastic life is no guarantee of, you know, sudden enlightenment. It's just purely a matter of our personal commitment to the training. There's a saying that in monasteries, snakes and dragons commingle, meaning that you get, you know, some people are really great monks and some people are just kind of getting by. Just like in life, you have wonderful people, exemplary people, and you have people who are not doing so well. Same. The monastery is not suddenly a place full of saints. No. We just have to believe that we can do it, as I said earlier. Believing that there is no impediment, there is nothing to prevent us from training, no matter what our circumstances. Easy for me to say I live in a monastery. However, I believe it is true. I have seen it to be true. I see people doing wonderful training every day who are not monks. All the Buddha's virtues can be practiced by all of us, no matter who we are. Kindness, unselfishness, or the paramitas, generosity, precepts, patience, effort, meditation, wisdom. We can all practice all of these things. Nothing stops us. Nothing prevents us from being generous, no matter who we are. Nothing prevents us from making effort or practicing patience. In lay life, I'm sure we have a million opportunities, just as in the monastery, to practice patience in all kinds of ways. Wisdom, wise discernment, constantly comes up. And meditation. As monks, we have more of a schedule of meditation. We sit together. It's really nice. It does help. There are advantages to being a monk. That's why we're here. But it's not essential. You don't have to be a monk to keep to the precepts. All of us can train on a deep level. We can keep to the precepts, we can meditate, we can practice all the Buddhist virtues. And as I said, sometimes it's easier as a monk because it's more focused, but it's not essential. Can you think of a single virtue that a lay person cannot practice? If you come up with one, let me know. And in fact, when it comes down to it, our daily training is moment-by-moment awareness, just bringing the mind back here and now, right here. All of us can do this. Being here in this present moment, keeping to the precepts as best we can, trying to work on our selfishness, trying to see clearly, trying to relinquish our view of being a self, a me, trying to be a decent human being, you know. It's the same for all of us. Same training for all of us. Ajahn Sumedho, I've been reading this book. It's called Don't Take Your Life Personally. It's a wonderful book. And he says, you know, he's been a monk 40 years, Theravada monk, and he was the head of the Ajahn Chah tradition in the West. And I think he's recently retired. But he said, you know, after all these years, this whole thing about you have to be a monk, It's not so. You don't have to be a monk. You don't have to be a Theravadin. You can get really stuck on those things. You can get stuck with the forms. Here I am. I'm wearing the robes. Therefore, I'm doing it. But you can be in a trap. You can think, am I a stream entrant? Am I a once returner? You know, and get stuck on these stages. And he says, it's completely unnecessary. You don't have to have any of those things. All you need to do is to entrust yourself to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. This moment-by-moment awareness. He has a sort of iconoclastic view, but it's very refreshing. You don't have to be a monk. He says this over and over. You don't have to be a Theravada. You don't even have to be a Buddhist. Just to practice moment by moment awareness, being here right now, doing our very best with the situation I'm in right now, with this body and mind, doing our best to keep to the precepts, to practice kindness, to relinquish all that past and future, the fear, the remorse, all the stuff. Just to be here in this moment and entrust ourselves to that. All of us can do that. None of us is impeded from that, in no matter what situation we're in. And it's so apparent that of course it is so. How could it not be? Somebody the other day said, well, if it was illegal to be a monk, would Buddhism die out? You know? I don't think so. All of us can practice truth. All of us can realize the way. We just have to believe it to be so, that we can do it and give ourselves to it. To give ourselves to it wholeheartedly. It's our commitment, our faith, and our giving ourselves to the practice that makes the difference. Lava Samantabhadra comes through all of us. No matter who we are, it flows through all of us. And nothing impedes it. The most likely thing to impede it is our own mind. And we can just simply relinquish that and just let it come through for all beings, including ourselves, to allow us to train in the way. That's our talk for today. Thank you.